Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rico Bronya's presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby. Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra. Let's get moving.
I'm NFL linebacker TJ Watt, and this is my personal best. YPB by Abercrombie is the activewear I'm always wearing. That's why I reached out to co-design their latest drop. I worked with designers to create high-performance activewear that holds up to my toughest workouts. Shop YPB by Abercrombie in-store, online, and in the app. Because your personal best is greater than anything.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
I have to laugh to begin this because what we all experienced on Sunday afternoon was the most inevitable, predictable, you could see this thing coming, collapse. And it got completed in the most perfect way. I mean, when you really think about it, it was so perfect to watch exactly how the New York Mets season ended. Welcome to an edition of the Rico Bronya that many Met fans were fearing, many Yankee fans were hoping for, but we all knew deep down this day was coming. The elimination edition of Rico Bronya, episode 560, as the New York Mets have authored yet another chapter in their long history, another epic collapse, another moment, another sequence of games that will live in history, that we will get to tell our kids about. Another reason why we are the LOL Mets. Another reason why when people ask you, hey, how come you're not positive? How come you don't think good things are going to happen? This event, what we like to call the 2022-5 New York Mets, 2025 New York Mets, whatever I just said, is yet another example of things we grew up watching, things we've seen about, heard about, another epic collapse. And it is only fitting that the frickin' Cincinnati Reds in game 162, with everything in their control after winning two games against the Brewers and jumping out to an early 2-0 lead, it was only fitting that the Mets would even shockingly get the help they needed. Here's how big of a schmuck I am. This morning, I was playing with my kids, playing with my boys, doing all sorts of activities. And my wife, who doesn't know anything about baseball, said, can you just explain to me the situation? And I said, sure, hon. We have to win and the Reds have to lose. And I gave her an honest assessment that I feel like an idiot that I ever uttered. I said, babe, I'm more confident we'll win than we'll get the right help. I'm more confident in this baseball team, at least finishing with a victory. And we'll sit here and bemoan, screw the Brewers. No, we'll say, you put yourself in this situation. I naively thought at 11 a.m., yeah, we'll win. We just won't get the right help. And that is the exact opposite of the way September 28th, 2025 would unfold. Oh, we'd get help. Even though Pat Murphy's taking Freddie Peralta out after two innings, even though Sal Frelick is trying to lay down a bunt with a runner on second and less than two outs, even if there were things early in the Reds-Brewers game that feared you, that caused you anger, irrational anger, of course, they held up their end of the bargain. And instead, the New York Mets showed us exactly who they are. They reminded us exactly who they are. Let me start off by reminding every single person that has such a big problem when I bitch about the offense. It's not the offense, Evan. The offense is fine. It's the pitching. I'm not exonerating the starting pitching. It's been a disaster. And yeah, it's a big problem that needs to be addressed. But the New York Mets, I'm going to say it on this edition. I'll say it once and then we'll go back to being family friendly. This limp dick offense, how did it show up in Miami this weekend? How did it show up in game 162 when they had a million opportunities? Where was it? Where was all the billion-dollar players? And I know Pete Alonso hitting a bad luck. He's the one guy I will exonerate. But they had chances in this game. They did nothing. They got shut out by Edward Cabrera and his buddies. And even on Saturday, when we were all celebrating such a great victory, they scored three runs in the first eight innings. They were lucky. They were lucky that Clay Holmes pitched the game of his life. And then go back to game one. What did the LD offense do? So let's just remind ourselves how this season ended. They scored seven runs in a three-game series with their backs to the wall. They went a combined, let me look it up because of course I wrote it down. They went a combined 0 for 8 with runners in scoring position in game 162. I am not exonerating the pitching. We all know how big of an issue it has been and how it needs to be addressed during the offseason. But stop with this. It's not the offense's fault. Let me give you a little factoid. Last year, the 2024 Mets scored two more runs than this team's New York Mets. They added Juan Soto. They had a big year from Pete Alonso. We expected the offense to be elite, to be really good, to carry this team. They scored two fewer runs than they scored last year. So to me, when I think about game 162, and I think back on it 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 30 years from now, when I write my Mets Bible 2 and I put this stupid game in it, what's going to jump out at me is this offense in three games in Miami, this offense in game 162 did not cut it. Now let's get to the pitching because I want to eviscerate them too. But really, it's not the pitching. It's this manager. The Rico B email account is just absolutely loaded with people that want Carlos Mendoza's ass fired. And while I don't lean to that area right now, I get why they feel that way. Because in game 162, Carlos Mendoza made a fatal mistake that even in the moment, I had a major issue with. You start Sean Manaea. And we all get what Sean Manaea has been this season and over the last few weeks. We get the uncertainty of Sean Manaea. And we talked about this yesterday in the Clay Holmes start. You know, even Hoff was saying, I'd have the bullpen up right away. I'd have everybody ready right away. And I don't disagree with that. You need to have your bullpen ready. You got to treat it like game 7 of the World Series. Fully agree. But I thought Mendy handled Clay Holmes perfectly in game 161. Even when there was trouble, he allowed him a way to get out of it. Sean Manaea comes into this game, deservedly starting game 162 when you look at the other options. To me, it was a no-brainer. Who the hell else were you going to pitch? There was no other option. David Peterson could have been nowhere near a mound for this game. So David Peterson's not an option. Jonah Tong on short rest is not an option. You're not starting Nolan McClain. You're not starting Brandon Sproul. Like, it is Sean Manaea. And Sean Manaea, while he hasn't been good in his last two appearances, has at least given you some small positive signs. And we also know about Sean Manaea that he's got balls, that the moment isn't going to be too big for him. And Sean Manaea has an opportunity to basically fix his entire season with one last big-time start. You have a chance if you're Sean Manaea and you go out there and you match what Clay Holmes did the day before, and dare I say the Mets win and get the help they eventually got, you have a chance to erase everything we felt about your season because, boom, you're in the playoffs. You helped us get there. Brand new life. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm doing my Met imitation. Huh. Manaea starts this game off with a 1-2-3 inning and two strikeouts. In the second inning of this game, He gets a ground out. Good play by Lindor and Alonso. He walks Connor Norby. And after a stolen base, he strikes out Eric Wagaman. When he walks Heriberto Hernandez with a base open and a rookie on deck who's had 10 at-bats, Keith Hernandez even said it on the broadcast. I agreed with him. Hey, you have a base open. You don't need to give in to Heriberto Hernandez, who, memory, 2 days ago, got one of the biggest hits in the game. So since we're treating this like Game 7 of the World Series, it is not crazy in the second inning with a base open to say, I'm not going to give in on Heriberto Hernandez, who's got 45 RBIs this year. And like I mentioned, a big hit 2 days earlier. And I'll take my chances with a rookie who's had 10 at-bats. And this manager, and it's not all his fault, obviously, but this manager decides with two outs in the second inning after a walk in which he was being careful with a base open, he decides to pull him. Are you freaking high? And the reason this is such a horrible move isn't that I didn't trust Waskar Brazoban. It's you got to get 27 outs. You've only gotten 5. You have a guy on the mound who, if things go well, like it did for Clay Holmes a day earlier, could conceivably pitch 5 innings. It's on the table. And you're in a rush in a 0-0 game when he walked a guy with a base open to take him out. This game died with that move. It killed this game. Even if it wasn't going to kill them right away or wasn't going to kill them one inning earlier or one inning later, you cannot make that move. And I don't know if Hoff disagrees because I know, and he's also doing a great job multitasking. He's producing Giant Post Game. Hell of a win by them. We'll spend, you know, some time talking about them on Evident Tiki. But I know Hoff wanted to take Clay Holmes out early yesterday. Respectfully, great. Did you want Sean Manaea out after that walk in the second inning, bro?
I did. I didn't trust him, dude. I did. I know.
But you trusted that?
I mean, I don't know what to trust, but I don't trust Sean Manaea because that can go at any time. They could.
Look.
It worked. They got out of it.
It worked in the short term, but the biggest problem I had with the move was 27 outs. It wasn't that Brazoban versus Navarrete was a bad matchup. It's when does this end? You've got to find a way. Not 27 outs, by the way. It turned out to be 24 outs because they're a bunch of losers. But you know what I mean. So it wasn't I trust Manaea. It was in this moment of the game, especially off a walk that's semi-intentional. He didn't walk a guy in a horrible spot. It was a walk with a base open and a rookie on deck. I'm sorry. I thought that was arguably one of the dumbest moves Mendy's made all year. Sorry.
And that's fine. Totally respectful to your opinion and whatnot, but it really didn't make a difference, Ev, because they could have kept him Manaea. They could have thrown in McLean. It didn't make a difference because the offense didn't show up.
Look, obviously you can't win a game 0-0. I will give you that. And that's why I started with the offense. But if you keep this game 0-0, you can't lose either. And I know that's an unfair expectation that they were going to keep this game 0-0. But look, my issue is this, and take it frame by frame. I didn't think there was enough of a warning sign in the second inning to take him out. And you know what you have in your bullpen. And once you are quick and aggressive to take Manaea out, then follow what happens next. Waskar Brazoban gets the next 3 outs. He gives up a cheap infield hit to Augustin Ramirez. And now because a lefty's coming up and Mendy has already set the tone of I'm just making hooks, he goes to Brooks Raley in the 3rd inning. And I'm not bitching about the matchup. Like, obviously, Raley versus Marcy, runner on first 2 outs. I like that better than Brazoban versus Marcy. But again, it's the 3rd inning. The only time where I'll defend Mendy on this. This is where I'm going to defend him. And I actually called this on the Rico Bronya last night for those that hung out, that Edwin Diaz could enter this game in the 5th inning. I think I even said specifically the 5th inning or the 6th inning or the 4th inning. Once you're behind, and once they were down 4-0, obviously you're in desperation mode. And I was screaming at the TV because when Gary, Keith, and Ron are all confused about it, I'm like, bro, it's an NBA game late. Extend the game. That's what you're doing. You're extending the game. You can't allow one of your garbage relievers to come in because you're saving Edwin Diaz for a situation that may never come and allow a 4-0 game to become 7-0 game. You have to keep it at 4-0. So I was actually with Mendy once they fell behind what he was doing. But at 0-0, he was too aggressive taking Minaya out. And I think at that point, he was too aggressive taking Brazaban out. Because, look, again, I love the Raley versus Marcy matchup. It's not about that. It's about the fact that what are you going to do in the sixth inning? What are you going to You got to play the entire game. And with one on and two outs, after Brazaban gave up an infield hit, you're in a freaking rush to get him out of the game? He's a guy who's capable of getting you eight outs. He could have got this into the fifth inning. So I just think the way he managed this, this was the anti-Terry Collins. I've had issues with Terry Collins and some of the things he did. Overall, he was a hell of a manager, so I'm not here to, like, argue. But one of the most brilliant things Terry Collins ever did before we fully knew who DeGrom was the way he managed Game 5 against the Dodgers in 2015. He could have very easily pulled DeGrom's ass early in that game. And I've admitted this before. I wanted to. I was like, Terry, what are we doing? He pulled off one of the most well-managed big games I think I've ever seen. He had the perfect pulse on when to keep DeGrom in, when to eventually pull him, go to Syndergaard, the whole thing. This guy had no feel whatsoever for this game. To take Minaya out when he did, to even take Brazaban out when he did, he's just going through arms like crazy. And then we're relying on Fat Thor to get big outs.
Wow.
They put themselves in a spot where Ryan Stanek, who I know has pitched reasonably well, where now you got to go to him with one on and one out in the fourth inning, and you're forced to have him face three batters. Yes, they needed to score runs. Yes, it's the LD offense. But my God, was this game managed horribly by Carlos Mendoza.
Yeah, but you know what? Not for nothing. He didn't have to go to Stanek there. He could have. I mean, Diaz, you went, I guess, at the right time. Or you could have put Diaz in that Stanek spot. Like, Stanek is one of the least, the guys on the back end of things. Like, I don't want him anywhere near this game.
So you hit on this. Here's the other first guess that I think people will trust I'm consistent on. Based on what I said last night about Edwin Diaz, how early I'd go to him. Once, it was after they took the lead. I wasn't going to Edwin Diaz in the fourth inning with a runner on first and one out. No way. But after he decides to go to Stanek, and he gives up the RBI double to Eric Wagaman, and then he gives up the RBI double to Brian Navarrete, I absolutely was ready to go to Diaz. Because my thought is, fourth inning, I'm already down 2-0. Like I said before, I got to extend the game. And I can't let this thing get out of hand. And those back-to-back hits that eventually Tyler Rogers gave up to Sanoha and to Edwards, obviously it turned out not to matter because the Met offense didn't do anything, but it felt like backbreakers. You turn a 2-0 game into a 4-0 game. So this isn't one that I kill him for as much, but I'm super aggressive with Edwin Diaz in game 162 with my season on the line, which is why I agreed with going to him in the fifth inning. But man, I would have gone to him in the fourth inning. Because you need to do everything you can to keep this game right where it is. And I got to hear Gary, Keith, and Rollin. What do you do in the eighth inning? It doesn't matter if you don't keep the game close. Yeah. And look, they sort of did in terms of not giving up any more runs after the fourth inning. So they kept it at four. But four isn't exactly close. It's not a one-run game. It's a four-run game. You need to get a bunch of base runners to bring the tying run to the plate. So I'm still not at the place most people listening are at, which is F it, fire Mendoza. I don't want to go that far, but I hated the way he managed the bullpen in this game.
Yeah, but you know what? And I don't want to give Mendoza an out. I really don't, because it was a terrible job by him, and he's been making every decision look wrong the past couple months. But he was set to fail. This pitching staff has been so bad, he couldn't do anything right. Even if he tried, it was going to go wrong. And he did try. But it was always going to go wrong, because that's what Stearns gave him. Stearns gave him a shit sandwich, and he had to eat it.
How do you explain the offense then? Let's go back to that. LD offense scored 7 runs in 3 games against Miami. How do you explain that?
There's 3 guys that are consistent on this team that are good. Soto, Alonso and Lindor, and they were consistent. And when they don't hit, the team doesn't hit.
Well, let's get to some specific moments because this drove me nuts. This is going to be the thing you think about, at least maybe not all offseason, because we'll probably turn to player moves at some point. But let's go through all the freaking opportunities they had in this game against the immortal Edward Cabrera. Mark Vientos draws a walk. Thank God they started him. I was on that last night, suggesting it last night. Don't give me Starling Marte. Give me Mark Vientos. Vientos draws a walk, steals a base that basically caused Jeff McNeil to be confused. So he struck out looking. Big opportunity number one. Runner on second. Nobody out. Francisco Alvarez grounds out. The Tyrone Taylor infield hit. He steals a base. Lindor draws a walk. Juan Soto and the discourse around Juan Soto is going to feel weird. It's going to feel unfair. Obviously, Juan Soto was not the Mets' biggest issue. But his season has been completed. He hit 43 home runs. He drove in 105 runs. He put up amazing numbers. No question. But it reeks a lot of the season Pete Alonso had last year, minus the chance to have big moments in October. He lacked a lot, that big, impactful moment. Did he have a few? Sure. Did he have enough? No. If you think he had enough, you're lying to yourself. And when he came up in the third inning of this game with two on and one out, he had a chance to have an impactful moment. It's a 0-0 game, but we all know they got to score a run eventually. We all know 0-0 isn't going to last forever. And as Soto is coming up after that four-pitch walk to Francisco Lindor, the Brewers had an opportunity. Because I got that game on. That game's as important as the Met game. And in the first three innings, I found myself more locked in on Reds-Brewers than even the Mets. So when Christian Yelich is up with a runner on second, down 1-0 in a big opportunity, a runner on third, I think, a chance to tie the game up, and he strikes out. This was simultaneously with Juan Soto bouncing into the biggest kick in the you-know-what double play he's had all year. He isn't their biggest problem, obviously. But now that the season is complete, and don't worry, we'll have an off-season Rico in which we examine every detail of Juan Soto's first year with the Mets, but don't lie to yourself. He put up great numbers, no question. I am confident about the future in terms of him putting up big numbers again, and I'm even confident he'll have impactful moments in the future. So I'm not suggesting he's some kind of dog who's never going to succeed here. I feel like I have to...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Preface this so no one gets too sensitive about it. But in 2025, it was not enough. Am I crazy? Am I really that nuts to say that? How many times did we say that about Pete Alonso last year? The guy I love so much, right? Said it all year about Pete last year. He put up fine numbers. It wasn't impactful. It felt empty. Juan Soto left us feeling empty. And in game 162, he came up in three monstrous opportunities. And in opportunity number one, he bounces into a double play. The other big moment was the fourth inning. This is right before the implosion. Xavier Edwards makes that great sliding play, robbing Alonso of a hit, who smoked every ball in this game outside of his first inning strikeout. Nimmo rips a hit, goes to second on a wild pitch, and you got two opportunities with Vientos and McNeil to drive a run in. Vientos strikes out on ball four. And Jeff McNeil weakly grounds out the first base.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless, while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniel's and Old Number 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This episode is presented by State Farm. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like expecting the leadership of a team captain on the football field, but getting a C captain. You wouldn't settle for just anything for your team. Shouldn't it be the same for your insurance? So don't settle for just any insurance when you can go with a leader. State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Jeff McNeil had a big hit in game two. All right, RBI double. I give him all the credit in the world for that. Outside of that, you talk about no-showing this series. How many times did Jeff McNeil find himself in a big moment and come up small? Why don't we count the ways? In this game, he strikes out on the Vientos stolen base. He grounds out with a runner on second. He grounds out with a runner on in the sixth. And he strikes out with two on and one out in the eighth inning. Count the ways Jeff McNeil was preparing for his golf season. And the other monstrous opportunity, the one that maybe we'll think about more than any other, was that fifth inning. Right after the Marlins score four runs, I say this all the time, when you give up a crooked number, not that you've got to get it all back right away. That's maybe asking too much, but you got to get some of it back. It's still early. It's the fifth inning. It's 4-0. The game should not be over. You shouldn't be done down 4-0 in the fifth inning. Get a run back. Get two runs back. Get back into this game. And they are handed an opportunity in that fifth inning when Mauricio draws the one-out walk. Lindor has a great at-bat in the fifth inning to draw a walk. And here's Soto with two on and one out. And obviously, we can't kill Juan for this big opportunity. He drew a four-pitch walk. So he did what he was supposed to do. He wasn't looking for a walk. That's not fair. Nothing was close. And Juan Soto has a brilliant eye. We've seen it all year. Most of the time, he is not swinging at pitches out of the strike zone outside of opening day against Josh Hader. So, obviously, no issue. He draws a walk. And right then and there, bases loaded, two out, Pete Alonso. I'm thinking back, not even to the Milwaukee home run. I'm thinking back to the home run he hit against the Marlins earlier in the year. Go all the way back to game number six of the season. They're about to lose a series to the Marlins. They're about to have a losing road trip after losing two out of three to Houston. And Alonso hit, if memory serves correct, a grand slam. Could be wrong about that. And I can't even look at my scorebook because it was a day game. So it was one of those on the air while the game was happening, but it was a late afternoon game, and Pete actually hit the home run while I was driving home. It was one of those early season consequential big home runs. Ways away from now, we'll do a Rico talking about the best wins of the year. I probably shouldn't even do that podcast, but you know what? We will. Maybe around Christmas, try to make people smile. But that home run he hit and that win they had against the Marlins was an early season significant win. And Pete has put up big numbers in Miami. He has succeeded in this ballpark for whatever reason. He had a home run in game two, had two hits. He had the RBI double in game one. He has had a good offensive series, and he comes up, and it's nobody's fault. This is the part of the Rico where we look into the sky and say, why do you hate us? What have we done as Met fans? Pete Alonso hits a ball that may well be the hardest hit ball of the entire freaking season, a screaming line drive that, if anything, should be a double to make it 4-2 and probably 4-3. That's what we're looking at. It is a new ball game off the bat. And unfortunately, because the baseball gods did not look kindly on the crappy, choking New York Mets, Javier Sanoa was right there. He makes the catch, and we all knew where this was going. But that was it. And it shouldn't be that, because Lindor even said that little comment to Pete Alonso. And of course he said it. He should say it. He said, "Don't worry, Pete. We're going to get another shot at it." And he should have been right, because the sixth inning, the seventh inning, the eighth inning, the ninth inning, with this bullpen, specifically Edwin Diaz, keeping the game close, gave them every opportunity for Francisco Lindor's words to be on that DVD, to be so poetic, "We will get another shot." And did they really? I mean, sort of, but not really. They never got the tying run to the plate again. They had a one-out hit by Vientos in the sixth inning, and that's when Jeff McNeil, count the ways he comes up small, grounded out, and then Alvarez swung at ball four after working, actually struck out looking on this one. This wasn't swinging at ball four. That was a few innings later, but he strikes out looking with one on and two out in the sixth inning. They get a two-out double off the bat of Lindor that should have been an error on the shortstop, and there's your other Juan Soto moment. If you just get a base hit to center and you make it 4-1 in the seventh, we probably still lose, but at least you begin the small crawl back. And Juan Soto very meekly pops up to second base. Another opportunity, and he had a lot of them throughout this season, another opportunity where it could have been magical, it could have been amazing, it could have been Soto's moment. And not that this would have been, it just would have been a nice moment to try to come back in this game, and he pops up to second base. And then you get the eighth inning. That was their last real opportunity. But even then, they never got the tying run to the plate. Alonso singles. What a day he had. He had the best 1-for-4 you'll ever see. The line out, a ground out he got robbed on, and a base hit in the eighth inning trying to start the rally. Nimmo hits a ball 110 miles per hour right at the center fielder. Vientos puts together a great at-bat and draws a walk, and there's flailing Jeff McNeil. I will say something so universal and so popular and so non-controversial. That needs to be the last we have seen of Jeff McNeil. Thank you for your time here. You will get a video someday. You were a very solid New York Met. I don't want to disparage you on the way out, but enough. 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 He did nothing in the last 3.5 weeks of this season. Nothing. And I'll go through it. Let's go through all the missed opportunities Jeff McNeil had over the weekend. He did have the RBI double in the sixth inning of game two. I'll give him that. But in the first inning, he flew out with a chance to drive a run in. It wasn't deep enough. He grounds out with a runner on second and one out in the first inning in the opener of this series. He comes up with a runner on third, two outs in the third inning of game one, strikes out. I mean, how many times did this guy leave men on base? So he strikes out. And then Alvarez puts together that really good at-bat, works the count from 0-2 to 3-2, and he swings at ball four. So instead of Ronnie Mauricio getting an opportunity, and I would have taken my chances with that. What a story that would have been. Ronnie Mauricio, who gets put in mothballs for a month, comes up tying run eighth inning. But Alvarez strikes out, and even though you got Gary Cohen basically begging to the gods, you know, wouldn't it be something if a team that has not come back trailing after eight all year long does it in game 162? Yeah, wouldn't it be something? But you knew, and I knew, and we all knew that was never happening, because the New York Mets ended this season the exact way they have played for the last 4 months. They get shut down offensively. Their starting pitcher only goes an inning and two-thirds, though in this case, it was very self-reflecting, or self-induced, I should say, because it was a Mendy decision. Arms in the bullpen, specifically David Stearns acquisitions, like Tyler Rogers, comes up small. And the offense does nothing and leaves countries on base, and goes 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. And even though Lindor left it all out there at the very end, he had the double in the seventh, even though it should have been an error. He had two big walks in the third and the fifth. He had all those leadoff home runs over the last week on this road trip. Lindor is certainly not to blame. But he, of course, ends the season by grounding into a very easy 4-6-3 double play that puts us all out of our misery and ends what I think is one of the most miserable seasons in the history of the New York Mets. This turned out to be everything we feared at the end. I mean, it followed a similar script to histories of playing the Marlins at the end of the year. Tiki always tells me history doesn't mean anything. And maybe it doesn't, but you can't argue that history in a lot of ways repeated itself almost to the exact thing. The only difference in the history of what happened now versus 07 and 08 is you got to flip the team you need to lose, losing on Sunday instead of Saturday. That's the only difference. Lose on Friday, have the other team win on Friday, lose control. Win on Saturday with a remarkable pitching performance from a guy you don't expect it from. In 07, it was John Main. The reason 08 can be unexpected is Johan was on 3 days rest with a torn meniscus. So even though he was Johan Santana, there was fear going into that game because of the injury and certainly because of the short rest. Got it from Clay Holmes yesterday. And then absolutely drop a massive deuce in your pants on Sunday afternoon. The only difference with history is that instead of the Reds losing on Saturday to give us more false hope, they lost on Sunday. It's all the same. And the thing about history, because in the moment right now, as we do this, Rico, less than an hour from the season ending, I say very definitively, like I've said for months, this is worse than 2007. This is worse than 2008. Here's the difference. The Mets still have a chance to rewrite next year and the year after. I am convinced what makes 07 and makes 08 so painful is that was it for that group. And that was it for us because they sucked in 09, they sucked in 10, they sucked in 11, they sucked in 12, they sucked in 13, and they didn't fully suck in 14, but they still weren't very good. So they responded to the two chokes with six consecutive, non-competitive, under 500 seasons. And then obviously 2015 was a completely different animal. The Mets are going to have an opportunity in 2026 to obviously go out and have great success. And if they do that, I think history will ease the pain of what we just witnessed. I think there's always a chance of that happening, exactly like what happened to the Red Sox in 03. 03 is not as bad as we felt in the moment because they won the World Series the following year. It's the way it always works. But as we sit here today, doing this, Rico Bronya, burying the disgrace that was the 2025 Mets, it's as bad as it gets. And it is worse than 2007. It was a slow, arduous, painful, predictable, disgusting death. And kudos to Gary Cohen, because his final call, much like his final call, was so brilliant in 2024 from 0-5 to OMG. Like, he really felt the spirit of the 2024 Mets. He buried this team. Buried them with that last call. And rightfully so. Because this team deserves every burial it gets from me to you to everybody. And now, I think what adds to the horror of this is we as Met fans have to just take it. We got to take it from Yankee fans. We got to take it from Philly fans. We got to take it from all comers. Because, yeah, the Mets followed a script I am very familiar with as a Nets fan and a Jets fan. Win the offseason, talk a big freaking game, and then implode in spectacular fashion. This was spectacular fashion. To not make the postseason after A, what they did during the offseason, B, building the lead they built and being 21 games above 500, and really over the last week and a half, getting more opportunities. Look, the Diamondbacks and the Reds never fully took it. They never did. And congrats to the Reds. You know why I congratulate the Cincinnati Reds? Because even though they lost game 162, they easily could have missed the playoffs, they needed to beat the Mets 4 out of 6 games, and they did. And they certainly did the final time we saw them back in early September. And they needed to go to Milwaukee with the Brewers still playing for something and win a few games, and they did. Now, did they blow it in game 162? Sure. They're helped out by us. But they still made the playoffs. We didn't. And the Reds, whether it was losing 2 out of 3 to Pittsburgh, whether it was just overall only winning 83 games this season, they gave the Mets every opportunity. The Diamondbacks, who were a threat 5 days ago, fell off the rooftop. This was handed back to the Mets. And we all sat there delusionally thinking, well, if they could just get to the playoffs, you never know. And I stand by the you never know. But this team continued to show us exactly who they were. And what they were was a team that was nowhere near deserving of going to the postseason. Now, speaking of the Cincinnati Reds, I've been on fire with my picks brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. I haven't even seen the line. I don't need the line. I'm going to make you a pick for Tuesday night at Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium. The Cincinnati Reds money line in game one. Because the only thing that's going to make this disaster worse, actually, there's a few things that would make this disaster worse, like a Phillies-Yankees World Series. That would make it worse. But one other thing that would make it worse is to watch the Reds do what we all...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thought, hey, just get in. Maybe the Mets can do. So I don't know if they're going to win the series, but they're taking game one. So money line it. That's my pick. The Reds money line, game one of the wild card series. Once again, that was the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Let me read some of your emails. And yes, it is contractually obligated that we will pick a Rico on the man right now, star of the series, and a net negative. Nick writes, and a lot of this is in the middle of the game, but it all held up fine. Nick writes, this bullpen game is like having all the friends speaking at the eulogy. It's very well said. Like, I was almost expecting the guys we forgot about to show up. Like, the relievers that, you know, oh, Brandon Waddell is here. Hey, say hi, Brandon. Chris Davinsky is here. Oh, look, Austin Warren's over there. Matthew writes, nail in the coffin. Ryan Stanek at a game 162. Mendoza has to go. Tyler writes, pathetic managing. Good job using 5 pitchers in 4 innings, Mendy. This is actually the most pathetic managed game I've ever seen in my life. You put your second most trusted reliever in the 3rd inning and pull him after 3 batters, only to bring in Ryan Stanek, who has by himself lost at least 5 games for the Mets this year. Absolutely pathetic. He's right. He is absolutely right. Edwin Diaz was maximized, rightfully so. And I think that Mendy went to Edwin and gave him that chance to come out for a 3rd inning. But look, Edwin knows his body. I'm not going to get on him for it. I think Edwin Diaz probably knew this is all I got for you. But with your other trusted relievers, specifically Brooks Raley, I'd say Tyler Rogers. But, you know, I don't know how much we can trust him. And we saw what he did. You have to maximize your best relievers. And so Brooks Raley comes into this game, and he shouldn't have come into this game in the 3rd inning, like I talked about earlier, gets an out, gets another out, gives up a hit, and boom, he's got to come out. He's your best reliever. And look, I didn't love the Raley-Wagaman matchup either, but it goes back to even going to him in that spot in the first place. Anyhow.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. and so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
I am reading some of the post-game quotes from some of the Met players. Let me see. Pete Alonso will exercise his player option. By the way, that is worded very strangely, Hoff, because exercising his player option would mean he's opting in for next year, which there's no shot he's doing. I think the player option is meant more as he's opting out. Edwin Diaz, according to Laura Albanese, will speak with his family before deciding if he'll opt out. Edwin, I'm going to give you some advice. And you're going to know this is not the advice of a biased person, because I want you on the New York Mets. Edwin, opt out. You have to opt out. You are the best closer in baseball. You had another ridiculously good year, and somebody, hopefully the Mets, will pay you. Just to clarify, Anthony DeComo says, Pete Alonso says he will opt out of his contract and re-enter free agency. And rightfully so. And nobody give him crap for saying that. He's asked about it when the season's over. It's not like he said it 3 days ago, which I know DeGrom took a lot of crap for when he said in spring training. Pete has been consistent. You know, I'm worried about this year. Well, now the season's over. Ask him an obvious question, give an obvious answer. Quite frankly, Edwin Diaz's question is obvious too. I don't know why he didn't just say, I'm going to opt out. But I guess he wants to talk to his family. Look, here's the deal. You want to be a New York Met, opt out and tell David Stearns and Steve Cohen, pay me money, more money than you're even owed. And hopefully they will pay you because they need you. As much as it's uncomfortable to give a closer, you know, whatever his salary will end up being and however many years he's going to get, Edwin Diaz is probably, and we're going to have an award show. Well, I tell you, all those offseason Ricos we did last year, it's going to come out very differently this year. The offseason award show last year was like fun. This is going to be miserable. It's going to be death. Is that a good sell to hang out with us during the offseason? Hang out with us. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be therapy. But we'll give out a lot of awards during the offseason, Rico. I'll tell you right now, Edwin Diaz is a candidate for the MVP. He is a candidate as the Mets MVP of 2025. This guy was money. This guy was clutch. He's asked to get six outs. He does it. He's asked to come in the eighth inning. He does it. He's asked to come in the freaking fifth inning. He does it. Edwin Diaz, in my money, for my money, because I don't remember Tug McGraw, and I'm too young for Jesse Orozco, this is the best closer in the history of the franchise, and I mean that with all due respect to Johnny Franco. So, Edwin, opt out and make the money guys pay you. But Pete Alonso confirmed what we all know. He's opting out. Noah writes, a loser is a loser. Evan, I'm writing this in the fourth inning of the Mets game. They're down 4-0, and nobody watching right now expects them to come back and win. I want to talk about the Mets, but to do that, I need to talk. Oh, excuse me. Jesus. Sorry about that. Yeah. What a day. I apologize for burping in your ear, especially if you're walking your dog on like an early Monday morning. My apologies. But Noah writes, in order for me to talk about the Mets, which I intend to do, I need to talk about the Jets. I became a Jets fan in 1997. I had just gotten into football and I needed to choose a team, the Giants or the Jets. I chose the Jets because they had just gone 1-15 and I stupidly thought, hey, there's nowhere to go but up. What I didn't realize was that there was a reason they were 1-15. They were and are a dysfunctional organization. They can change owners, coaches, players, and uniforms, but it's impossible to change the culture of an organization. I quit being a Jet fan in 2012, the night of the butt fumble, because a loser is a loser. I am afraid the Mets are the same. The character of this team hasn't changed much in the last 25 years. When they are expected to be good, they fold. They did in 2001, 2008, 2007, 2017, 2023, and now 2025. Whenever they do make it deep in the playoffs, it's often because some sort of magical run that no one saw coming. They are choke artists. This is the Mets' identity. You can change the owners, the coaches, the players, the uniforms, but it's impossible to change the culture of an organization. Steve Cohen said he wanted to change the Mets' culture. He's finding out the hard way that there are some things money can't buy. I'm not going to quit being a Mets fan, but I think it's time we all adjust our expectations. Is the team favored to be good? They're going to stink. And they're expected to be a couple of years away from success? Well, watch out. They're probably going to go on a run. Either that or just find something else to do with our evenings from April to early October. That is from Noah.
Noah, I just want to say something. I totally understand where you're coming from with this whole culture thing. I'm bothered by it too. Like, it pissed me off last year when we, to think back to last year when we were celebrating the wild card win, the NLDS win, and that's what they said. We're changing the culture. And then they have this dumpster fire of a regular season. You can't have both of those things. You can't change the culture and then have this long, elongated car wreck of a season. You can't have it.
Yeah, obviously, this season sets back the goal of changing the culture in a major way. All right, Steve said to us last year, we're going to change the way Mets fans think. This sets this thing back 10 years. But the part of this email that I can't get around is they have changed the owner. They have changed everything about this organization. What are you trying to tell me? They're cursed? I don't believe in that. I don't think anyone really does. You just believe that because they're the Mets, no matter who owns the team or who's on the team or who the president is, no matter what, they're going to find ways to lose and be bad? I mean, it's not reasonable. You know what I mean? Like the Jets, why the Jets? And I want to answer the Jet part of things because once Leon Hess brought in Bill Parcells, okay? Bill Parcells, to his credit, absolutely succeeded in changing the New York Jets culture because within 2 years of being 1-15, they're in the AFC Championship game. And yes, crap happened. Like, no doubt, Vinny Testaverde tearing his Achilles is crap. Bill Parcells walked away. But when he walked away, he left the place in such good hands that even with Al Groh, they won 9 games. Even with Herm Edwards, they went to the playoffs multiple times. Even with Eric Mangini, they made the playoffs. Even with Rex Ryan, they're in back-to-back title games as they're changing owners and they're going to this incompetent Woody Johnson. Now, eventually, Woody Johnson, as the owner of the team, brought the bad culture back. But between 1997 and 2010, for a good 13-year period, they were not the same old Jets. I understand they didn't win anything, but you can't tell me that that was the same crap. It wasn't. They were basically a consistent winner in a lot of ways. They'd have a bad year, then they'd have a good year. I don't believe in magic and fairy dust. Like, the Red Sox curse was always offensive to me. You want to know why it was offensive to me? They weren't cursed. They had an owner who was an incredible bigot. They had an owner in the 1930s and the 1940s who had a chance to integrate baseball with 5 incredible black players from the Negro Leagues. And he was so bigoted, he didn't do it. Don't tell me about curses. Tell me about Tom Yawkey. And so that always bothered me. They were also the last team to integrate. A big part of why the Red Sox sucked for a long time wasn't because of the magic fairy dust of Babe Ruth. It's because they were run by ignorant leaders. So I don't believe in curses. I don't believe the Jets are cursed. I believe Woody Johnson's a really bad owner. That's where they are right now. So it is a tough day, and it is going to be a very, very tough offseason. And I'm certainly not going to tell anyone to be confident. But don't give me this, You can change the owner. You can change this. It's always going to be the same, because that means there's something spiritual and magical to failure. And I have a tough time wrapping my head around that.
I agree with you. I do not think they're cursed. I actually still somewhat, for some reason, want to believe in David Stearns. But I will tell you this much. After this season, and if he doesn't re-sign Alonso and he doesn't re-sign Soto, Diaz. If he, yeah, that's what I meant, Diaz. No, Gregory Soto, go away, please. I'm done with it.
Yeah, but I was going to say.
If he doesn't sign, if he doesn't re-sign those two and then do more on top of it, he looks like a Chaim Bloom type of guy, which is not a good thing for the Mets and the Mets fans.
Look, we are going to have endless off-season Rico Bronyas. I'll give you a headline right away. It is going to be very difficult to lose Pete Alonso, especially in an off-season in which your fans are pissed. And oh yeah, I said this earlier on in the Rico. I'm going to say it again. The New York Mets scored two fewer runs than they scored last year. Two fewer runs. Meanwhile, Pete Alonso had a monster year, and they headed Juan Soto, and they scored two fewer runs. So if you're going to take away a guy with 38 home runs and drove in 126 RBIs, you best replace him. And what I think that means is if you lose him, you've got to replace him with another proven star. Like, basically, you'd be playing fantasy baseball. You'd be saying, all right, I'm going to change up the mix. Pete, you're gone. Hello, Kyle Schwarber. You know, something like that. Or Pete, you're gone. Here's Alex Bregman, because those are tough guys. Those are winners. Those are guys. And I'm not suggesting that. What I'm telling you is just think of baseball for a second. Forget the money. Forget the years. How do you replace 38-126 from an offense that went backwards compared to last year? So I agree. It's going to be very difficult, more difficult than it would have been last year, to sell your fans on losing either Pete Alonso or Edwin Diaz. Let me read a few more of your emails, and then we'll pick some awards, which is just depressing, but we'll do it. We owe it. We have to be consistent. We have to complete the season the way we started the season, like losers. Matthew writes, Mendoza needs to be fired. I know it's the fifth inning, but every single rational Met fan knows this game is over and it falls squarely on the shoulders of Carlos Mendoza. The strategy of the revolving door of relievers, five pitchers in four innings, shows that Mendoza has no plan other than panic for the entire game. You just knew that he would find the reliever that did not have it and he wouldn't be able to do anything about it because of the three batter minimum. Bringing in Tyler Rogers with men on, knowing he struggled this year with inherited runners, shows that he's just flat out panicking. It's an absolute joke of a game plan, and even though I've defended him for most of this season, today's game showed me, and hopefully Stearns and Cohen, that Mendoza is in over his head. He needs to be fired on Monday morning. Kevin writes, fellas, we mortgaged a lot of mojo and juju in 2024. We should have expected this. This is our receipt. This is why I have said this a thousand times, not just about the Mets, even teams I do not like. I say it about the Knicks. I've said it about the Jets. I've said it about every freaking team in this town. When you are on a magic carpet ride and you went further than you expect, spare me with house money. Spare me with, well, what would you have said in April? Spare me. Because those magical rides don't come around all the time. The Mets had a magical ride last year. They were tied 1-1 with the Los Angeles Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. That was their moment. That was their opportunity. And no matter how smart David Stearns is, no matter how much money Steve Cohen has, you don't know if you'll ever get that chance again. And that's even off a successful regular season. You could win 105 games. You have no idea if you're going to be in that spot again. 1-1, NLCS, going back to your building. That's why you have to take advantage of it. And they failed. They failed in 2024. And 2025 turned into an absolute nightmare. Tyler in Manhattan writes, Evan and Pete, that Pete Alonso line drive will be playing in my mind all offseason. Literally the hardest hit ball by any Met this year, actually nauseating. Now we just have to wait and wait and wait for the inevitable shutout, which turned out to be the case. They got shut out. And Pete Alonso will go out, if he doesn't return as a New York Met, in such an incredibly frustrating way. Him hitting the line drive that would have brought them back in the game, him getting the base hit that started the rally in the eighth inning, only to be a road to nowhere. Pete Alonso did his part. Was his defense great at the end of this season? No. I'm not defending that. But while Juan Soto took his cool 0 for 3 and a double play, and even the day before, 0 for 3 with two walks, there was Pete Alonso hitting a home run, ripping a double, and hitting a line drive that, because the baseball gods just totally hate us, nestled into the glove of Javier Sanoja. But you know what? Let me tell you something about the baseball gods, because I don't want anyone to hear that and say, woe is me. It's not. Woe is this team. They created this opportunity. They put themselves in a spot where bad luck could end their season. Can't have that happen. That was always the fear. Once you allowed this thing to get close, you created the possibility of bad stuff happening, of a line drive being right out of left fielder, or just bad luck in general. Ugh, what a disgrace. You know, you could knock one out of the park and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field and Fuji Apple, of course, white peach and lemon. Carlos Mendoza says he's pissed off. Great. I'm happy for you, Carlos. I'm happy that you're mad. I'm happy that you're sick. I'm happy that you don't feel good. I'm happy that this bothers you. Bothers us too. Bothers us a lot. And as I sit here right now, I do think they're going to bring him back. I lean towards bringing him back despite my anger with the way game 162 is managed. But here's how he comes back. He comes back, and he's going to know this, and we're all going to know this, on the hot seat. And that doesn't bother me in baseball. Like in football, it does more harm than good. But in baseball, it doesn't. Because how many times have we seen managers fired in the middle of May or June, and then the team gets sparked? Whether it's Rob Thompson a few years ago, even when the Mets fired Jerry Manuel, fired Willie Randolph in the middle of the year. While they didn't make the playoffs, they played a lot better after they fired their manager. So that's where I would lean. I would lean towards you're on the hot seat. But David Stearns now embarks on a very challenging offseason. A very challenging offseason. Because you're going to look at this team and you got to figure out a very difficult question. Why? Why did this happen? Is the answer simply we didn't have enough starting pitching? That's a part of the answer. It's not the whole answer. Is there something about the room that needs to be changed? We heard so much about the magic of 2024, the OMG of Jose Iglesias, the leadership of JD Martinez. Do you have to do something with the culture and the personalities in that room? I'd be lying if I told you I knew the answer. How would any of us know the answer? Pete Alonso seems like he's loved in that locker room. Lindor going up to him after the line drive and saying, hey, Pete, you're going to get another shot. Alonso wearing the eye black of Lindor and the cup of Soto or whatever the hell he was doing. Like, I don't know how anyone could look at Pete and say, yeah, move on, because that'll change the culture. Will it? Is Brandon Nimmo, I know he's your whipping boy, Pete, does that change the culture? Does he seem like a problem? So it's a very difficult question to answer other than just blanketly saying they have to make change for the sake of making change. Off the top, the guys I would move on from are not the superstars. Like, I don't want to move on from Pete Alonso. Like I said earlier, he's tough to replace. I don't want to move on from Edwin Diaz. Juan Soto is an amazing baseball player who put up great numbers, who wasn't as impactful as we need him to be. I think he'll be impactful over the next 14 years. Francisco Lindor, I want him on the team. So really, like off the top, yeah, I want Jeff McNeil gone. I understand the Mets kind of looking at their young position players like Vientos, Beatty, Mauricio Acuna and saying, hey, let's kind of expedite it a little bit. Let's take one or two of those guys and trade them for back end of the rotation help, pitching prospects, bullpen arms, whatever. Obviously, trades need to be of good value before you just say trade someone. Jeff McNeil, I've already mentioned. I'd be open to dealing Francisco Alvarez. I'd listen. Doesn't mean I'd be in a rush to trade him. I think I'd listen on almost everybody. But the whole idea, and Sal and I have talked about it. I'm sure Sal will do a great job talking about this on the middays this week. He has been a big proponent of you got to change the core. And what I always say to that is, all right, let's get specific. Who and why? Do they need to move on from Francisco Lindor? Most of us would say no. You're not moving on from Juan Soto. It's not even worth talking about. Pete Alonso? Is that the guy? I mean, Pete Alonso was probably the guy over the last 3 days who left it more on the field than anybody. That's the guy you want to move on from? That's the guy you're going to feel better moving on from? Brandon Nimmo? So it's a deeper question that we are certainly going to kind of focus in on. But let's pick our net negative and Rico, I'm the man now star of the series. I actually have three candidates for the Rico, I'm the man right now star of the series. I think you could give Pete Alonso, it's more Alonso's honorable mention because he played some bad defense earlier in this series, so I can't ignore that. And the line drive was caught. So it's more, hey, good job, Pete, honorable mention. I think it comes down to two guys. It comes down to Clay Holmes, who pulled a John Main, pulled a Johan Santana, and it comes down to Edwin Diaz. Even though Edwin Diaz pitched in, you know, games that weren't one-run leads, he got six outs in game 162 in the fifth and sixth inning, and he also made sure of getting the last three outs and hammering down the Saturday night game. So I think it's between those two, but honestly, it's got to be Clay Holmes. I think the only positive memory we will actually have, and barely at that, from the conclusion of this season is the fact that Clay Holmes, a converted reliever into a starting pitcher who had, for the most part, a successful season, though he wore down at the end, in the biggest of moments, delivered his most brilliant work. So I don't know if you're in the car, Hoff. If you're not, you don't have to turn the screen on. If you're available, great. But I think it's easy that Clay Holmes has absolutely earned our very final last series of the year, Rico, I'm the man right now, star of the series. You agree with that?
I don't want to, but I guess I have to. There's no one else.
Well, Edwin Diaz, Pete Alonso, anybody else you want to give it to? Lindor?
No one had a clutch moment in the last week of the series. It was just Clay Holmes. That's it.
I mean, here's the problem. The problem with the offense is if you're doing it based on offense, it's Pete Alonso. Their offense scored seven runs in three games. F them.
Yeah. I mean, Brooks Raley had another good weekend.
Brooks Raley? I'm like, Brooks Raley got the loss in this game.
I know, but it's not really his fault.
No, I know. He's not. Dude, just give it to Clay Holmes. Can you just agree with me?
I can't. Well, fine. I will, but I'm going to put the caveat.
What?
He's not a starting pitcher.
We will discuss that in the offseason. This is not about your opinions about Clay Holmes. It's final series of the year. The Mets lost 2 out of 3. It's very painful to do this, to actually hand this award out, but we've been doing it all year, so we got to do it, all right? It's Clay Holmes. Can't even argue it. The net negative is I got to tell you, there's a lot of options for the net negative. You could go with any of the pitchers that you want to blame. You want to blame Gregory Soto for Friday night. You want to blame Brandon Sproat for Friday night. You want to blame Fat Thor Ryan Stanek for what he did in the fourth inning. I think it's all fair, and they all kind of deserve in their own way honorable mention. But to me, this series is defined by the number 7. And that doesn't mean Brett Beatty. They scored 7 runs. 7 runs. Are you freaking kidding me? This limp D offense shows up with the season on the line against the Marlins, who have announced to the world, we want to stick it to you, and you score 7 runs? So it's got to be somebody offensively. And despite the fact that he did get one big hit, the RBI double in the sixth inning of a 2-0 game, I think it's Jeff McNeil. Because how many times in this series did Jeff McNeil come up in big spots and come up small? Go all the way back to the opener of this series. They're up in this game 2-0, runner on second, one out, he grounds out. Comes up in the third inning of that game, leading 2-0, needing to add to it. Runner on third, 2 outs, strikes out. So 2 opportunities in game 1. In game 2, he comes up in the first inning with 2 on and 2 out, and he strikes out. He does come up with the RBI double in the sixth, credit to that. But so far, I got 3. Then you get to the finale of this series. He strikes out in the second because he's so confused by Vientos stealing second with a runner on second. He grounds out with a runner on second in the fourth. He grounds out with a runner on first in the sixth as they're trying to rally, and he strikes out with 2-1 in the eighth inning. Count the ways Jeff McNeil came up small, and to me, he's the net negative. And he hasn't won it very often. In fact, I'm looking at our history. Has he ever even won a net negative?
I'll tell you right now that this is a unanimous because Jeff McNeil should be net negative for the entire season, and he should be off this team as soon as possible. So I totally agree with you on all that.
You ready for this, Hoff? Jeff McNeil is one of the only guys who never won a net negative until now. How about that? Well,
congratulations. Don't let the door kick you in the ass. How about
that? That's crazy. He won 2 Rico I'm the Man Right Now Stars of the Series, and he won 0 net negatives until the very end. I think that one is going to be an easy, unanimous one. I think it's easy to say move on from McNeil. The contract is a little bit more kind of easier to move than it was last year, one less year on it. And obviously, they have a lot of options. They have a lot of guys that you can say, all right, you're the second baseman. A lot of options. It could be Brett Beatty if you decide to sign a real third baseman. It could be Ronnie Mauricio. It could be Luis Angel Acuna if you want to give him a chance. It can be Jet Williams. There's a lot of ways you can go at second base that involve Jeff McNeil being off this team. So congratulations, Jeff McNeil. You're the net negative. And congratulations to who do we give it to? Oh, Clay Holmes. Edwin Diaz won the Rico I'm the Man Right Now Star of the Series in the Chicago Series and the Washington Series. So we had a chance to make it 3 in a row. What a freaking brutal ending to this season. What a brutal freaking ending to this season. Now, let me give you an idea of what happens next for the Rico Bronya. And I understand that 80% of the people that are probably drinking Met fan tears right now are probably done with us. Like, all right, we got our use out of you. We laughed at you. We mocked of you. Now we're on to the real stuff, like Yankees Red Sox and Dodgers Reds and the real MLB playoffs. But one thing we do at the Rico is there is no offseason. So let me give you an idea of the way this week is going to work. David Stearns is going to pop his head out, and he's going to meet the media. And when he does, Pete and I will play everything David Stearns has to say. You'll hear it right here on the Rico. And then after each answer, we pause it, and we give our opinions on what he just said. So when David Stearns meets the media, you can listen to it if you want, or you can wait for the Rico Bronya, because we are going to respond to everything. What is Joe B calling him? The boy wonder, the boy genius, the man from Milwaukee. That drop may have to come back. That is, of course, Alex Rodriguez referring to Bud Selig as the man from Milwaukee. I guess now we can call David Stearns again the man from Milwaukee. So we are going to respond to everything David Stearns has to say. We are also going to preview the MLB playoffs in the most Rico Bronya way possible. And we will do this once the wild card series is over. I still view the wild card series as like the preliminary rounds. So before the real playoffs start on Saturday, later this week, once the field of eight is set, we're going to preview the playoffs, but the Rico way, which means we go through all the former Mets and guys that have connections to the Mets and what our rooting interest is based on all of that. So it'll be a very Mets-centric MLB playoff preview. That's coming up this week. And yes, we are going to hand out every award, the good awards and the bad awards, from what was the disgraceful 2025 season. So there is no rest. There is no break. And yes, we will dive very deep into what the hell this franchise needs to do next. Because there are a lot of questions that feature very complicated answers. I'm going to study it myself too. What do I want? What do you want? Other than the obvious, which is just to not be a loser anymore. What do you want? What do you want this team to do? Give it thought. Look at the free agents. Think about these players. And I think we got to give it a week or so. We will dive very deeply into what we want to do next. So that's a little preview of what you have coming up in just the next few days and weeks here on Rico Bronya. It is going to be a very long offseason. It is going to be a very depressing offseason. But don't worry, we are going to hold your hand the entire way through. With that said, Is there anything else I have to add? You know what? I'm going to do one thing before we leave. I want to see, because I honestly don't know the answer to this, if this owner, Steve Cohen, has popped his head out with any kind of tweet. And the answer is no. He's remained silent. I'm sure at some point in the next few days, Steve Cohen will say something. We will react to that as well. And anytime there is breaking Met news, as fast as we can, we will give you instant reactions here on the Rico Bronya. Obviously, I'm on the air for 4.5 hours. So if it happens during the show, you can just tune into WFAN. But anytime there is breaking news, as quickly as we reasonably can, because I know this may be shocking to believe, Hoff and I do have families. We do like to spend time with them. We will do our best throughout this offseason, though. Thank you very much for what was a horrible season. I was going to say a fun season, but what the hell am I saying? Thank you for being with us. It's been a ride. It's been an interesting ride. And we are all family. We're a family of losers. I just hope that you guys out there at least don't share my love for the Brooklyn Nets. Hopefully you're a Knicks fan. Because if you're a Knicks fan, no troll here, at least you have hope. You have a shot. You go into a season thinking, we can win a championship. I am jealous of you. I am rooting for your agony and your pain. But I do say to my fellow Nets fans, boy, we suck. But to you people that are Knicks fans, congratulations. At least you have something to look forward to. We, on the other hand, we're losers. Thank you very much for listening, hanging out, being depressed with us, crying with us, laughing with us, laughing at us on the last regular season edition of Rico Bronya. I hate this team.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.